You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
Tracy, unless I'm horribly mistaken, in the archives of the Functional Nerds, because we've been doing this for a really long time, in the physical book archives of the Functional Nerds, which is downstairs in the super secret underground lair of the Functional Nerds, which is also called my basement, I have not one but two versions of Peter Arulian's debut novel back in the day. Two versions. There are two versions of it.
Most people don't get two versions of their debut. Yeah.
No. But Peter did. And I have that. And so I'm excited that we're able to talk to him again today.
Fantastic. And so for me, sort of the funny part of the story was we get on the call a few minutes ago. And I was like, okay, so these are the people we're talking to this weekend. And I'm really excited. And I'm like, I thought you might really like Peter because he's a musician and his writing ties in music. And you're like, I know. and I'm like, what? And you're like, yeah, we had him on a couple of times before when John Anelio was with us. So here I am butting in place of John Anelio. Peter, it is lovely to meet you. And congratulations on your collaboration with Brandon Sanderson on Songs of the Dead.
Thank you. And I'm happy to be back. Yeah, this is fun.
And he's still rocking. Because if you look at his website, he's still a rocker. He's still doing stuff.
Yeah, I can't seem to choose one path.
That's fine. You don't have to.
We may
have to.
We may have more rocking happening in the vicinity of Shea Townsend in the near future because my father-in-law passed away about a little more than a year ago. And he was a musician by avocation rather than vocation and had bunches of different guitars and different instruments and stuff. And he passed on his bass to my son, who just turned 19. And my son does not play any stringed instrument at all. But I just dropped off at our local music store yesterday the bass, which probably hasn't been touched in 10 years. To get the pickups cleaned and get some light gauge strings on it for his tender little baby fingers because he wants to self-teach this summer. So got any tips for a baby bass player?
Oh, it's the two things are, you know, you really do have to practice.
Yeah.
But then take a lot of inspiration from there's so many like the internet has been a boon for bass players who sometimes we're seen as just sort of the necessary part of the low end and rhythm section in the band, but there are some like world-class bass players who have YouTube channels, and it's really inspiring to see what the instrument, what is possible with the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I would encourage him, you know, if he really is passionate about the instrument, to seek out some of those. They're easy to find.
Yeah.
And they play the bass, sometimes six string basses with the same facility that most guitarists play the guitar.
Wow.
Creating melody and just these rich compositions. I sit and watch them for fun. And I think it can be inspiring for a young player to see what's possible with the instrument. And then you just have to woodshed. You just have to spend the time with the instrument.
Yeah, go on there and hack away at it.
I have a couple of points to make. Number one, since we are talking about Mr. Anelio, when he left, he picked up the bass. And he's been playing bass in New Jersey with various bands in his free time ever since.
Oh, good for
him. That's one of the things that he's been doing that kind of brought him joy. Like he was really stressed out for a long time after the baby was born. But the bass has brought him a lot of joy. And then the other thing for Corwin is I'm curious, like, is he interested in picking or slapping?
Given that we're dealing with an electric bass here, he's probably gonna start with picking would be my guess, but I don't know. He got into the idea of doing it in the first place because some of his friends that he met in college, he just finished his freshman year, play in a band together, but they don't have a bassist. And so they heard from him that there was a bass guitar that had been passed on to him, and they gave him homework over the summer. Like, go away and come back knowing what to do with that thing. So it's a matter of honor now.
Then eventually he'll have to learn that technique that the guy, the bass player for Peter Gabriel invented for Sledgehammer, where he puts the things on his fingers and he plays with the things on his fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As I lift my right arm that I'm not supposed to lift because it's supposed to be in a sling.
So while we're talking about baby bass players here, we should probably talk about your most recent word baby over here with Songs of the Dead. Can you give the audience an impression of what's the story here? Where are we coming into?
Well, you know, Brandon had this idea for a story for probably the better part of 10 years that he was calling Death by Pizza. And it was about an American metal singer living in London who is a pizza delivery guy. He gets shot on a delivery and dies and wakes up as a necromancer. And so it was kind of a fun idea. He hadn't gotten into world building, really. He tried his hand at one scene. Excuse me. But what he realized was missing is he understood intellectually that the metal culture, you know, an audience is often stereotyped in media, and that it was actually a rich, meaningful, you know, group of people. But he didn't really have any experience with that. Mm-hmm. And he had read some of my books and blurbed some of my books, but he also knew I was a musician and that I'd been a touring musician and written and recorded records. And so when we started talking, he realized that I could bring this authenticity to it. So the story, you know, kind of evolved from that little tidbit I gave you into a story about it's the same premise where this American metal singer's in London, but he's kind of trying to escape his past in a way. He grew up in West Los Angeles in a gang family. He had some very traumatic moments as a kid. And so the dream is kind of two part. It is a true passion of his, but it also is kind of an escape.
Yeah.
And then he fall in, you know, because it's a contemporary fantasy, when he awakens to this new reality with these magical properties, this new reality shows him that even his friends around him that he's made are not all what they seem, and that there's this reality that exists under London. We call it the strata. It's aggregated layers of the past that's formulated by the memories of the residents there that are types of souls who've not yet moved on to whatever next estate exists for the soul. And that these eras of the past, you know, you can imagine with London, it's Victorian and Renaissance and medieval and Saxon and Roman, et cetera. That there's a powerful magic user. We invented a new magic system we call thanaturgy. And so he's a thanatist. And this thanatist is fomenting revolution against the topside world. Because what's happening is in the world above, in our world, the sort of neglect, the mistreatment, the marginalization, the revisionism of our world on history, about history, is sort of foreclosing the opportunities of these souls in the strata to move on, to find their purpose. And so he has a very legitimate reason for wanting revolution, of course, as most authoritarians, though, he wants to go further. And so Jack, who's the name of the character, finds himself right at the nexus of this revolution that's about to, this tension really between the past and the present, this war that is coming. And so he's racing to prevent revolution. He's racing to save the Iron Horse, which is the name of the bar / metal club that exists in Soho in the West End in London, where he's grown this group of friends, and to, you know, ultimately to save his friends. And going back to where I started, what Jack kind of learns here is that, you know, he had this very traumatic past with his own family. And he comes to this realization that he has a found family with these people around him. And this, mm-hmm. this goes to this idea where Brandon and I wanted to treat the metal community with a certain degree of thoughtfulness and authenticity, because they're not a stereotype. They are as much a found family as we are in fantasy and science fiction circles. So it's got a lot of layers to it, which is, you know, there's a top layer, which is just a lot of cool magic battles and racing to get things done. And that's fun. But I think there's some cool meaning under the hood.
I saw a video on the socials of you showing the places that inspired the places in the book.
Yeah.
And talking about, this is where this particular club used to be. and it was the red building. Can you talk a little bit about that? That was pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. So when I knew I kind of wanted to set it in the West End in London. And we chose London because London's got a deep history, that which goes to that strata that I was describing. But then I, I wanted to ground it in some places that were real. This is, I think, unique for Brandon, because I don't know, 99% of all of his work is Second World work.
Cosmere, yeah.
It's the Cosmere, and he's got a couple of books that are sort of First World books, but this whole series is a First World series. Now, of course, there's the magic of the past and all of that, but it's set in present day London, and so I went looking for locations that would be fun to set this. And I found what was known as the Crowbar. It was a metal bar on Manet Street, right in, you know, right in Soho. And it was very centrally located, had a cool vibe. So I decided to use that. I had to expand what it actually is, but it's a real place. You can go visit it. Now it's a disco bar. So it's still music, but it's not metal anymore.
That's hilarious.
That's like a dramatic shift.
It is. Yeah, it is. I think that they were doing some construction on that street for a long time. And I think it was actually a bubble tea or something as an interim. So at least there's music back in the space. But then I just radiated out from there. And, Jack's flat I envision them as just across Charing Cross Road, which is like, 30 meters from this bar where I set the Iron Horse. There's a road called Charing Cross, and then there's a little tiny alley that goes off that called Flitcroft. And so I was just in a Google Earth kind of tooling around inside London. And I imagined it in the back of the Phoenix Theater that's on that corner, a couple of converted wardrobe rooms that would be his flat. And then down further down the alley on Flitcroft would be Henry, his one of his good friends, the proprietor of the Iron Horse, would live. And so I just kind of did this exploration there, and set scenes. Some I invented, and then some I left as they were. Like there's the Imperial War Museum. There's a scene there. I didn't have to change anything about that. So I think it'll be fun, for fans who read the book. If they're interested, they can actually visit actual locales where we set scenes.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, because you talked about there's a tendency to kind of oversimplify what it means to be a fan of metal or to be a metal musician, like what that whole cultural space looks like. Can you give us any examples of things that are true to your knowledge and experience of the metal world that you really made a point of trying to introduce into the text?
Yeah. It's not really, I think, a huge epiphany to think past the stereotype to the idea that when any group of friends are getting together, they're probably talking about the concerns of their own lives. They're talking about their health problems, their relationship problems, taxes, the things that we all talk about. So there's that. There's humanizing them by just showing that they interrelate in the same kinds of ways that most groups of people do. Now, of course, they have a shared passion, and that may be foreign or alien to us. Like some people may not really like rock and metal music, and so it seems like an other person's thing. In the same way that some folks look at fantasy and science fiction folks and just use the term geek or nerd and think they know the all of who that person is. So a lot of it was not leaning into the stereotypes. I mean, what's interesting is when we started, Brandon notionally thought it would be more of a humor book. But he also, the reason he brought me in to collaborate, because Brandon usually collaborates with people who bring a strength to the collaboration that he doesn't have. And in this instance, part of that for me was, that I'm from this world. And the humor was, to me, a little bit at odds with the idea that we would try and treat them, treat this group of people as they're going through this sort of crazy, surrealistic race between the magical past and the present. It would have been like writing a Spinal Tap novel. Which would have been fun. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Spinal Tap's a favorite. I watch it probably on order of six times a year. It's hysterical for me. But I didn't want to make the book just so funny that it, I think that would have done a disservice to the idea of, you know, treating that community as a real community. Now, that said, it's not like every page is some sort of diatribe about how, you know, you must respect us because we're people. It's really just showing they do the same things that people do. They react to trauma. They react to crazy doings like, you know, hellhounds racing after you the same way we all would with fear and with, you know, surprise and questions. And then layered on top of that was the passion itself. So, you know, there's this this approach in writing fiction that I think is the right one, which is if you're, you know, your character walks into a room and you describe everything in the room, the writing's labored. And the reason is because your character is the lens they see that room through is their lens. So if they're an architect, they're going to notice architectural things. But if they're noticing everything, I think it's disproportionate to who they are. So for in this case, because it's music, it's kind of wonderful because everything that Jack, you know, the lens he sees the world through is a music lens. And so he's using music metaphors and he's noticing music. Music is one of the main things is music is a sort of valve, pressure valve for him. Not to go too deep into it, but this trauma that he suffered as a child, he found some very unhealthy ways to deal with that. And it wasn't until he found heavy metal as an outlet that he found a proxy for how to deal with it and let off the steam. And excuse me, what's really interesting, I ran a podcast, much like yours, for a short time, and I had on anthropologists. It was a metal rock podcast, and we talked about this, and there are studies that show that heavy metal fans in particular often are better adjusted in their work-life balance. They're more faithful to their partners. Mm-hmm. They're happier, you know, on average than the normal person. It begs the question, you know, is it that kind of person attracted to the music, or does the music create that kind of person? Ultimately, I don't think that matters, but I think it's suggestive of this idea that, you know, the music has a value, the people behind it and that participated in it are like you and I, but they have this shared passion. And the last thing I'll say is we didn't want it to feel like a gatekeepery thing. We didn't want, you don't need to know anything about rock or metal to enjoy the book. We were very purposeful about not making, there was no special knowledge needed, right? So a band may be mentioned, and if you don't know that band, it doesn't matter. There's no special knowledge needed to apply to understand the story. Mm-hmm. But having said that, for those people who know a little bit about, you know, rock and metal, there's some resonance there.
You don't need to know the names of all the companies in Germany that are putting out all the heavy metal albums right now.
You don't need to know any of that. there's going to be, you know, there's big name groups that everybody will know, you know, like Led Zeppelin and Iron Maiden, you know.
Hey, Zeppelin was a blues band. Come on.
Oh, that's controversial.
But I think, like, to the point that you're making, Peter, about not wanting to be gatekeepy by name dropping things that if you don't have context now you're lost. I think that in addition to that being a good thing to be present for like the verisimilitude of the text, but at the same time to like keep the reader involved, it's also an opportunity. Like I remember about, oh gosh, might have been 10 or 15 years ago, shortly after the book came out, Joe Walton wrote a book called Among Others that got a lot of praise and attention in speculative fiction circles. And the book was structured like a diary of a teenage girl living in Wales in the late 1960s, early 1970s, who was a huge fan of science fiction and fantasy. She also happens to be the child of a witch, so it's a whole thing. And she's always talking in these diary entries about the latest things that she's reading. And it's the only book that I've ever read that the act of reading the book generates a to-be-read list. Mm. Like I went back through and because I'm a dork, counted, and there's like 400 texts, whether it's short stories or books or whatever, that get mentioned in the course of Among Others. And it turned into this like almost project for me to be like, how many of these do I know? And like, do I, based on what this character says and her diary entries about them or the context in which they come up in. And so I could see the way in which those references to the music also kind of open a door to the reader, to give them a chance to respond to the characters. This means something to them. Like, they know what this sounds like. They know what this reference means, but I don't. I want to know. And we are now in a world where we are one Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube search away from finding the answer.
Yeah, it's a good point. There's a character in the book that's a good friend of Jack's. Her appellation is Madam, Lady. It's actually shortened to Lady of the Valley. She was a nurse in the war who was actually, you know, did surgeries on the battlefield, and so she has a certain special skill that's useful in this magical reality we've created. And her favorite group is Queen, and so when she needs her comfort music is Queen, and you know, there's lots of fun play. There's a scene where they've kind of outrun the bad guy and they're catching their breath, and Jack is feeling a bit dispirited and needs a little bit of a pep talk. And Queen comes up, and one of the characters says to him, you know, Jack, there's no time for losers. Now, the line works whether you know the lyric or not, but yeah. If you know Queen, it's kind of a fun little play. There's a lot of that. And it won't hurt my feelings at all if people read this and there's a group that I mention in a particular context, you know, because the music has in some moments is healing for the characters. It's motivating for the characters, what have you. If someone wants to dial it up and say, you know, why? And maybe they find a new band they like, you know, that wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. And I think I've had some early readers already who are starting to, you know, finish the arcs and whatnot, who are loving all the music references. I had a kid at London Comic Con a couple of weeks ago. They had some pre-release copies, and he got one. I was there with The Broken Binding, who's my UK publisher. He got one on Friday, and Saturday morning he came back and he had stayed up all night and read the book. And he came up to me and he said, "Hey," I said, "Hey," he said, "yeah, I started reading last night and I couldn't stop." I says, "Oh, that's good." He goes, "I finished it." And I was like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah." So then he proceeded to show me pictures in his phone of all of his favorite quotes in the book that he had taken. And then he started talking to me about, you know, questions he had and excitement for book two. When was that coming out? And then one of the things he said, I really loved a bunch of the music metaphors. He goes, "I'd like even more of those in Jack's own interior voice." It was a very thoughtful comment and piece of feedback. So I think that, and this was from a person who's not a musician, doesn't really know rock and metal, but he appreciated the fact that the character has this rich relationship with the music, and that it had a value in the storytelling, even in the absence of his personal knowledge of the music. So I think that was hopefully a confirmation for me that we struck the right balance of using the music to really set a tone and a texture in the book, but also, you know, provide this opportunity for people to come to the music without feeling like they have to understand it.
Yeah. That is really,
you know,
cool.
It's fun because I love music. My comfort music is the Beatles. It's always been the Beatles. Mm. That's where I go. But I've grown a lot, you know, since I was a kid. I listen to a lot of different things now. One of my favorite bands to listen to now is Rival Sons. I don't know if you know that.
Very good, yeah.
They're very Zeppelin-y to me. Like they and actually it came from an Elio. And Elio was like, "I know you like Zeppelin, so I think you need to try this other band. I think you're going to like them." I'm like, okay. But one thing that does bug me is when I'm reading a book and they get something wrong about a song. So I've talked about this before. I don't know why the Will Trent books speak to me, but they do for some reason. And like, it's not my genre. It's not my thing, but I like those books. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they're talking about the music. He and his girlfriend are talking about the music. They like, her name is Sarah. And she quotes some song that's called Sarah. And she says, "But I prefer the version by this other band." It's a completely different song. It's not a cover. And I'm just sitting there going, it's that's not the that they didn't do that song. They did a different.
That was a Google search away. Right there. Or maybe what you're seeing is the result of a Google search that didn't go any further.
But the question you haven't asked yet, Tracy, that I'm concerned about. When does the Peter Arulian Songs of the Dead vinyl album come out? Like, are you working on that yet?
Well, that's an interesting question. So slightly askew from that, I just did start a playlist on Spotify. Okay. Songs that are mentioned in in the book. It's up to 35, and I'm nowhere near finished adding to it. But I did write that one of the things that happens in the book is the main character, using the tool that is makes most sense to him, which is writing a song to deal with this trauma that I told you about. Mm-hmm. He's been doing this the better part of his life, writing this song about, you know, some of the tragedy of his childhood, to try and deal with it. And he can't, he's got this third verse that he's been struggling with most of his life that he can't get right, that has to do with his mother. So there's this recurring thing that in, you know, see these beats in the story where he's trying to get this right. And I wrote that song. And when they were doing the audiobook, the producer did, she didn't know this, but she sent me an email. She says, is there any chance you actually wrote that song? I said, actually, I did write that song. She goes, is there any chance you'd be willing to sing it? And I said, sure. So what happened there, it's actually a moment where the character and his best friend Chewie sing the refrain together. And it's a really important pivotal moment late in the book near the climax. And so I sent the lead line to the narrator, Luke Daniels, and Luke is a world-class narrator.
Oh yeah.
But when he sent me back his recording, it was in three different keys. He had sort of modulated. Yeah. But that's okay. There's Melodyne, so we can fix things. So then I sang, and we kind of adjusted and created the right harmony. It's a cappella, you know, to be consistent with the scene in the book, but that'll be a little fun thing for folks when they get to that portion of the audiobook is hear us actually sing it, because that's a song I actually wrote. Yeah. But one of the Dragonsteel guys, Isaac over at Dragonsteel, I was talking to him a couple of weeks ago, and he asked the same question. He said, did you write the song? I said, yeah. He goes, did you record and release it? I said, no, I haven't done that. He goes, you should.
Yeah.
So that's on the agenda for this summer. Once I get through all of the big book push, is to actually record the song and put it out.
Well, one of the things in the last, 12 years since we've talked to each other, is that I've gotten huge into vinyl. And so I buy a lot of vinyl now.
So I think what he's saying is you'll have one guaranteed sale.
Absolutely.
Right there.
One guaranteed sale. Yeah.
Fantastic. So while we're talking about things that we're excited about, picks of the week?
I think we should do picks of the week.
All right.
We'll get to picks of the week. Just hold your horses. We'll get there. Before we do, I wanted to talk to you for just a second about $5. I know. You're shaking your head now. Look, they say that $5 doesn't go as far as it used to, and they're kind of right. Can you get a cup of coffee for $5 these days? Some of you are saying yes. Like a black coffee, right? You could get a small black coffee probably for $5 somewhere, but you're not going to be able to get one of the fancy ones with the stuff in it. Shot of this, shot of that. Those are going to cost you a lot more. So that $5 is not going to get you that. But you know what? There's a place where you can get a ton of value for just $5 a month, and that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. Let me break it down for you. $5 a month and you gain access to things like our super secret Facebook group, which has been going on forever. Our brand new and popular so far, I'm enjoying it, a lot of other people are enjoying it, but our brand new Discord server, which is also super secret. Can't get there from anywhere else. You have to be a patron of the Functional Nerds to get there. You get a monthly video hangout, and those are really cool. That's me and Tracy host, and the patrons like you, if you become one, get to hang out with us, and we all chat and we talk about the things that are going on in the world and have a little bit of a nerdy conversation. We talk about books sometimes and movies and other things. So you get that for $5. And on top of all of that, one of our most popular things that listeners absolutely love, you get the Patreon exclusive episode of the pod that we call Just Us. That is just me and Tracy talking about stuff. And by the way, if you joined today, you would get all the back episodes of that, I believe, which is kind of cool. And that's all for $5 a month. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and help us keep the lights on and keep this thing we call the Functional Nerds Podcast rolling on. While you do that, you don't have to like pull your earbuds out or stop listening. We're just going to jump right into the other thing that listeners really, really love. It's called Picks of the Week.
All right. So, Patrick, other than like working shoulders, what things might you pick as good things to have?
Yeah. Hyperextending your arm is not a good thing. So don't do that. I have talked about getting into anime accidentally, kind of, sort of. Since I do have the Crunchyroll for a little bit because I did the anime deal, I've been asking my friends who are big into anime to recommend things. And one of my friends, Jeremy, loves an anime called Black Clover. And he is a chef, and there's a character on there named Charmy, who is a chef. She uses her magic to create food to help her friends, essentially. She wants to bring them joy, and she also wants to help them restore their mana when they're fighting. So he loves it. He loves her so much, he got a tattoo of her on his leg. And so he was like, I really think you should check out Black Clover. I checked it out. After 5 episodes, it gets to the point where I can take it. The first 5 episodes, the main character, Asta, screams a lot. And that bugs the crap out of me. He reminds me of Damian Wayne, and I just want people to slap him. But after that, it becomes this really cool – he's got a Black Clover grimoire that gives him – he has no magic at all, none, in a world where everybody else has magic. What he pulls out of this grimoire is these swords that are anti-magic swords, and that's what gives him his power. And they're like black and rusty, and they look really freaking awesome. And season 1, quote unquote, air quotes, of Black Clover is like 180 episodes.
Oh God.
It's been going on since 2017. And now they've announced a season 2 is coming. And I'm like, holy crap. But it's on Crunchyroll. How long are these episodes? They're like 27 minutes, like a normal, like, anime show. What they do is they have the show, and then they do credits, and then they do what's called Clover Clips, which is like a funny little thing at the end. Mm. Once he and his stepbrother get to the city and they become magic knights and there's all these other characters, it becomes a really, really good show. And it's called Black Clover. I'm watching that on Crunchyroll. So that's my pick. And now I have to use my right arm to write down what your guys' picks are.
Oh.
So go for it.
All right. You made it. Peter, what has been bringing you joy?
What has been bringing me joy?
Give me anything.
Seven Dust just released a new album not too long ago. Seven Dust is they came out in the nu metal era, although I think they're a lot bigger and better than just that subgenre. Wonderful soulful singer, great music, and I think they're a criminally underrated and underknown band. So that on that side. And then the other thing, I've been rereading Summer of Night by Dan Simmons, which might be my favorite novel ever. It's one of the few books I will go back to and reread. It feels like I'm reading my childhood when I read this book. Yeah. So that's on my bed table. Those two things. And then I'm doing a lot of composition on the second Symphony North record. That's my group. And you know, writing books and writing music are the two things that bring me the most joy. So
fantastic. So for myself, it is summer and my kids are both not doing school things right now, which means we're doing the thing that we tend to do of figuring out what we will do with each other during summer. And my son has become a huge Marvel Comics fan in the last several years. And it's been interesting to see what direction he went with that, because I have a Marvel Unlimited subscription that I actually don't use very much for myself. It's largely just him using it. So anytime I log into my account, I'm like, what do they think I've been reading? Because it's all him. And Daredevil has become his favorite character. And so for Mother's Day earlier this past month, he got me a copy of Frank Miller's Daredevil treatment, Man Without Fear. And I read through that and enjoyed it. And so one of the things that we do in our negotiating what to do with each other over the summer to spend time together is we often pick shows that we're going to watch. And so Deirdre had a show that she wanted her brother to watch with me and her. And Corwin really, really wanted Deirdre and me to watch Daredevil with him, but specifically the original run of Daredevil from 2015, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio and all that. And so as is traditional for Tracy, who was always way behind the television curve, I am now in the year of our Lord 2026 watching a 2015 show, which, you know, new to me. And I am 5 episodes deep in the first season of Daredevil and just really deeply impressed by what they've been able to do with that show to make it very clearly the bone structure of the character and the world without needing to lean into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, without needing to make that the kind of required reading experience, so to speak, for the audience. And I've been just really gratified by it. It's been fun.
There's a reason that Born Again happened. And it's that show. Because originally they went in a completely different direction. And as they got into it, Charlie Cox and D'Onofrio are like, this is crap. We already did a really great show. Why are you trying to change it? And then how often do you hear of actors being able to change the direction of a project? And they did it. And that's why Born Again exists, is because they built it on the foundations of that show. Now, having said that, I wish they could have done something with a Danny Rand character, but unfortunately, they never were able to do Danny Rand. So if someone comes up and says, you know, Danny Rand is in this episode, they're lying to you. He's not there.
Okay.
Just keep going.
Okay.
The Immortal Iron Fist. Yeah, it'd be great if they did that sometime.
Yeah. I know what you're doing. All right. So, Peter, it has been awesome for me getting to know you on what is, for me, your first Functional Nerds episode, but certainly not actually your first Functional Nerds episode. So welcome back. Congratulations on Songs of the Dead. We're all looking forward to it coming out on June 16th. And in the meantime, we hope you have a great book tour. Where can people find you and catch up with you in the course of the universe here?
So my website's probably the best place, because then you can find all my socials from there. And it's just my last name, Arulian.com. But, you know, if you're just a person who only is on Instagram, just look for @PeterArulian. I think that's consistent across most of them. And I work really hard to post kind of all the things to all the places. I need to find one of those programs that's like a one post and federates to everywhere.
They don't exist anymore.
Do they not exist anymore?
Yeah,
they'll do like three of them, but then the other one, it won't work. Or it'll do two of these, and then the other two, you got to do something different for. It's really weird. Yeah.
Well, then maybe just go to my website, arulian.com. That's a good place too, because, you know, a lot of the socials now, they do this sort of artificial constraint of who actually gets to see the stuff you post anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So it's better to go there, and then you get a chance to link off to my music, and I'm always a fan of cross pollinating my creative stuff. So
I went to your website and I saw that you have an events page, which is cool.
Yeah.
So it actually shows where you're going to be and what you're doing. I think you're doing something with Brandon on the 17th.
It's 16th. Yeah.
16th.
Okay. Launch day is the 16th. We're in Salt Lake. Brandon and I have an event there. Then I fly here. I'm doing an event with Matt Dinneman.
Oh, wow.
Dungeon Crawler Carl. I have a hard time getting that off my tongue.
It's a little bit of a tongue twister. Yeah.
But he and I are doing an event on the 17th here in Seattle, then Portland on the 18th, and then on the 19th back to Tacoma. Oh, in Portland, I'm with Ty Frank, who is half of James S.A. Corey of Dance. And then finishing in Tacoma with Terry Brooks and Robin Hobb. So nice. It's a short tour, but all folks that I know well enough or have enough blackmail goodies on them that I can force them.
That's fantastic. With me. I love it. Well, thanks awesome. So much for being with us, Peter.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. Those likes help with the nasty little algorithm so new people can find us when searching for good stuff to listen to. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. At the-functional-nerds on Facebook, at functionalnerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And at thefunctionalnerds.bluesky, which is BSKY, .social. I know, I couldn't keep it copacetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching, if you want me, it's ATFMB, because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on, and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent, so you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know? It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet?
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, I really love what you do," I'm like, "I'm sorry. Do you know who I like? I think you have me confused with someone else."
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.